the First Step Ever podcast, and I am Ishani Nigam, your host and producer of the podcast. This podcast is made for all the disruptors around the globe who know that they are made for something, for that one thing, but fear of embarrassment, fear of rejection, the fear of fear itself holds us back at some point in time. But hey, those are the only milestones that if we cross, we are there to take our first steps. So, welcome on this journey with me where I interview people from across the globe so that they can share their story, their challenges, and you know that even you can surpass yours. Well, what are you waiting for? Let's get started. Welcome on my first step ever. We celebrate some amazing, unique stories of the first steps, the hard steps that a person takes to achieve their goals, to make their dreams come true, and in the process, find that resilience, that persistence, and their some unique factors that even maybe they were unaware of themselves on the journey. So please join me in welcoming one such unique person who is such a beautiful, intelligent, and lovely, and a kind-hearted soul who is today on my first step ever. Someone really young who's changing the mindset of youngsters and many alike. Today, please welcome Daisy Wu all the way from Melbourne, Australia. Hi, Daisy. Welcome on my first step ever.
Thank you, Ishani. It's my honor to be here. Hello, everyone. I'm Daisy Wu. I'm the award-winning founder and author of Multilingual Connectors. By that, I'm a thought leader and a mentor for non-native English speakers like myself to build meaningful connections interculturally, maximizing their unique advantages and without perfect English.
That's incredible. Thank you so much, Daisy. And as you've already given us a bit of glimpse into who you are, what you do, and what really, really kind of, you know, is close to your heart and how you are influencing, impacting, inspiring people all around the globe, especially in Australia, to feel confident in the way they speak, in the way they communicate and come across, and changing lives on the go. I'm going to add a little bit to your introduction over there, which is that from a Mandarin speaking international student to a winner of the Top 100 Women Award, you are the founder of Multilingual Connectors, as you rightly mentioned, and you mentor and guide non-native English speakers to maximize their unique advantages so that they can master networking and build deep connections across cultures to unlock opportunities and career outcomes. Now, that sounds really interesting and something really valuable, but I'm sure to reach this, you know, phase in your life, things must have not been easy for you as well. And I feel that this stems from your personal experiences, and now you are taking those experiences, building on that, scaling that learning, and giving out to people who can really be benefited. So we will exactly uncover that journey of Daisy. How did she become the multilingual connector, the founder, also the award-winning author, and many more things under your belt, Daisy? Because I think what you're doing is just not helping someone be confident learning a language, but also accepting who they are and building confidence in them. And that's so important. So let me trace some steps back into your childhood, and let me shoot this question to you. Please give us a peep into your childhood. Where were you born? Who were you surrounded with? What kind of mindset were you brought up with?
Yeah, sure thing. Thank you, first of all, Ishani, for providing a wider cross-section of my recent journey in Australia, precisely over the last 8 years and just over. And as you also identify, I was an international student. I originally was from China. I was born in Shanghai. Up to the age of 17, I grew up in Shanghai in the traditional competitive education environment. And that's where I only learned English predominantly in the classroom. And was somehow indoctrinated or conditioned to believe that I must master English in order to have a bright future before the plan of studying abroad, studying Australia, came on the plan. So in 2015, when I was 17 years old, I landed in Melbourne in my dreamland to pursue my dream of being a migrant in Australia. So initially, it was construction management, nothing English related that I studied. And that was exactly how my journey started, and the way my journey started was exactly what created my message, which later on become my messages, as the famous saying goes, our message eventually become our messages. So I landed in Melbourne. I, in order to qualify for Melbourne Uni, had to do a bridging course, or what we call foundation studies. But there I was classmates with prominently Chinese students, Mandarin-speaking students, as in even though we had multiple English subjects to equip us linguistically and socially to integrate better and transition better into the university curriculum, my social environment and my cultural environment, my language environment wasn't ideal at all. And on top of all of this, my parents were so protective so that they wanted me to be under the wings of my aunt and uncle, so they made these people my homestay.
Wow.
In the Chinese suburb, precisely Brookfield in Melbourne, for those who are familiar. So you can imagine how upset and how deluded I would feel initially. I feel my parents were wasting their investment for me to study abroad, because before my departure, I would envision becoming a fluent English speaker and more native-like in a matter of time in order to prove myself as successful overseas and gradually approach my goals. So that's how I started, for me to believe more firmly things will be better, even only if my English was better. And long story short, when I started university, I was able to slightly socialize more, and via volunteering, I was able to diversify my social network and gradually spoke better English. So that in 2018, when it was only my second year and had no experience, I was referred to my first industry job in construction by a lecturer. I was so blessed, and that certainly kept me more motivated to take on those leadership roles at various clubs and societies and NPOs to build my CV. And fast forward further again into 2020, I was doing my master's at Melbourne Uni when the pandemic hit. Back then on my CV, I had the highest GPA from my faculty during my first degree at Melbourne Uni. I was appointed the first and youngest tutor in construction at Melbourne Uni. I had so many awards and recognitions under my belt for me to feel very entitled for another entry-level job at a slightly bigger and better, more renowned company. So
That's incredible. I was looking
for another entry-level job. But guess what happened? We know COVID's playing out. We were in the middle of the longest lockdowns in the world. But I was able to interview whatsoever with those dream companies. But guess what happened in the end? I was rejected by most of these companies, domestic and international, which were renowned. And I was not preferred over the other international candidates who had less local experience. We didn't really speak good English because I knew them. They were my classmates or friends. So basically, I was just like having many slaps on my face. I was so deluded. My ego was so hurt. I thought I was the best candidate in town, potentially within the international cohort. But guess what? I wasn't selected. And also in the same period, in lockdown, I was spending that all alone, having so many mental and social challenges. And back then, I already was recognized as one of the best connected graduate to be on LinkedIn, having more than 3,000 connections. But guess what? At my lowest point, who could I link on? I couldn't even call like 10 or 30 of them real connections who I could make a call with during a point of a crisis or emergency. So all of these experiences, in contrast to my initial outlook, just made me rethink. Was it true that things would be better if and only if my English is better, and if language proficiency was really the key to success and interpersonal success in a multicultural environment? So that was all the genesis of my thought leadership nowadays, as you can see.
Wow, Daisy, there is a lot to unpack from what you have just taken us through your journey, you know, coming, sort of migrating to a different country at a really young age of 17, as you mentioned, and then in your span of like 2 or 3 years in your uni, you had to go through a lot of transitions, and you were always up for that challenge of learning and also kind of connecting people on the go, not just helping yourself improve, but helping other people. And then when the COVID market hit, I really understand how that feels, because I think most of us have been in that boat, and we did all all of us did get some sort of reality check in different ways, I suppose. And if not reality check, but at least we know that it wasn't that easy for any one of us. And I would say that is not a reflection of any one of our caliber. We are all very, very hardworking people. And so are you. I can definitely see that. And you've definitely earned that connection that you have built. But it was definitely a very challenging situation to even, you know, get through an interview or, you know, be able to justify a position at that point in time and people being laid off. So, but you had a very interesting dilemma at that point in time, as you mentioned, you know, that you had so many connections, but none to really call and, you know, kind of share your, you know, sorrows or maybe your deep-rooted feelings at that point in time, which is a real challenge for migrants, I would say so. And it's very interesting that you could connect it to being not being able to speak the native language. So that leads me to my next question, which is, that's where I want to maybe ask you that, how did you recognize your inner voice and you really made the big move of, you know, getting into the, being the connector of the multilingual connector that you are, because I can see the seed being sowed somewhere around this time. So I would really like to ask, why did you feel that language was the barrier?
Well, initially, I would have interpreted the term language barrier in the same way as most of the non-native English speakers who, by the way, just so that you know, occupy more than 80% of the English-speaking population worldwide. So yes, we are the majority. However much we are identified elsewhere as marginalized and underrepresented groups. Right. But whatsoever, I was aware that I was transitioning in a Western English-dominant country. And that's where I would love to thrive by being socially able to prove myself by speaking English. I thought that was the hallmark of success of social integration in Australia. So initially I thought, hey, as long as I was able to translate the language or grasp different accent, I was okay. But later on, I did grow to the point where I was outgrowing the language barrier in the most traditional sense. So I was able to grasp English spoken at different speeds in different accents, but I was still not quite able to understand people very well. I was able to read those complex paragraphs, reports with technical terms and jargons, but I still struggled to read people's minds and read between lines in some instances. I could write essays to get the top grades in the university, the top technical documents, the top reports as part of the assignment, but I still struggled to even buzz people with a sharp but sweet message to connect further or to prompt any actions. Whether I was motivating people to have a coffee chat with me, escalate my CV, or when I was leading the student clubs as the leader to motivate them to extract some performance out of them, I sometimes struggle with the shorter messages to get what I wanted. I could speak English more and more fluently, but there are so many occasions where I still didn't feel I was understood, appreciated, and valued as a person. Not so much because of how my English would sound or appear to people, but just I feel there was a lack of connection, lack of some sort of energy exchange or chemical between me and some people. In and outside of my ethnic circle, for sure.
I can see a lot of emotion of, you know, being able to connect with someone. And I think it goes far beyond just the language, as I can hear you say that. You were doing everything that a person would do at a, you know, in a position of a leader, or maybe a person who is a confident person, a person who knows what he or she is doing or they are doing. You were actually assuming those roles. But I feel that from what you say is that even it was not just about the language, but about being able to connect with someone heart to heart. And I really hear you, and I really can see for a lot of migrant non-native speakers, this is a very, very big challenge. From what I hear, that you were at least able to get through your assignments and you were, you know, doing the top grade, top job over there. But again, for a lot of us who are not the native speaker, even that is a difficult step. So you had already, you know, crossed the step, you were doing well, but still you had that bit of inhibition of, you know, how can I really connect with someone? And in that particular language that really felt home to the other population, to the country that you had come to. So Daisy, I would say that it's interesting that you had to go through that experience, because as you very rightly termed, it was a transitioning and transforming phase for you. Because if I can generalize this particular feeling that you have, a lot of our listeners who are listening to us today, it could be language for someone. It could be just, you know, that they're not able to express themselves, or it could be any other thing for someone that you want to kind of, you know, learn that, or you are so much interested to get across certain things or your feelings that you really want to learn any sort of language that can get that across best. And you would like to tell other people that even I can do this, and I can bring much more than this. And if this is the only rule, or maybe this is the only way of getting through you, then I'm ready to do it. So I really love that attitude, Daisy. And I can see that you have really built upon that. So I would like to kind of ask you then, how did you plan your next move, your next steps from that particular, you know, space where then you realize your inner voice, you knew, okay, this is the gap probably, or this is the step that I have to take. How did the journey of being a mentor or founding the multilingual connectors, how did the journey begin for you over there?
As I firmly believe, for us to lead anybody on anything, we have to lead by example. So the hurdle for me to establish myself as a thought leader and as one mentor who can provide a solution for people like me struggling with the same problems and once wearing the same outlook which were not serving them, trapped in the same mental prisons, I firstly had to find some of the missing pieces of the puzzle myself. So conceptually, I was able to trace some of it in the literature. Precisely one of the books which to me is today still very revolutionary and paradigm shifting, that was John C. Maxwell's Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. On this, I'd like to remind all the audience, regardless of your linguistic background, each and every one of us would not be immune to not being able to connect well. So there's one of the questions that begs one of the questions I really love asking people, whoever might entertain language barrier back then and now. That is, would you imagine yourself having a better experience, more seamless, frictionless experience, if you factor out the language barrier? If I put someone in a typical networking setting, I bet a lot of them don't know how to lead the conversation. What is a chit chat without a firm agenda, or one with an agenda attached but with a time limit, or all other constraints? Do they know how to hold the conversation? Do they know how to systematically design, construct, and implement their networking strategy in the lead up to connections, not just context? So to give them some example, I'm just in an attempt to remind people that there's so many other elements behind connecting besides the mastery of a language. So on the back of John C. Maxwell's very famous book, I did more research. I also signed up to many other personal development programs and mentorship for me to piece together what I learned, which laid the foundation of what I do today. So to give you a snapshot, I would like to provide the working definition of multilingual in multilingual connectors. So by conventional definition, people will conjure up someone who can speak more than two languages to be someone who's deemed multilingual. But I don't think mastering more than two languages to be necessarily the hurdle or key requirement to thrive in a multilingual / multicultural environment. And I would argue that even if you just master English or one other language than your first language, you may still be able to become a multilingual connector under my definition, whereby aside from a foreign language, or at least one foreign language, you're also able to command the emotional language, you have the cultural intelligence, you have the situational awareness to piece all of this together. So this is what I, in my book, Multilingual Connectors, encapsulate in a framework. as what I believe the three most important elements to build more meaningful connections interculturally. So the first one is still the language hurdle. I believe one still has to have a mean to medium or average mastery of a foreign language, assumed to be English in many instances, but not necessarily being native-like. The second part is the mastery of human psychology and behaviors, which certainly starts from self-mastery. For you to manage all the relationships from the outside, you have to start from within. So there are so many interwoven concepts underlying, such as self-concept, self-image, confidence. And the third element is mastery of communication essentials. I might just take you back to the typical networking setting. So let's say you understand English, but do you know where you may find the suitable avenue for you to connect with the so-called right person at the right time? How do you know it's the right time to ask for something? How do you know this is the right event to go to? And if going to events is your best networking strategy, right? And also in the context of job hunting, a lot of the people tend to think that the CV or the interview, the performance review will be where they primarily promote themselves. But they probably also have overlooked the other opportunities to promote themselves to stay more visible and meaningful to their network. So these are all what I encapsulate under communication essentials. Of course, the podcast on its own is not sufficient to provide a full spectrum of explanation. It takes a book to illustrate all of these points. But just so that people know, being multilingual does not mean you speak many languages. And in fact, the mastery of languages is not going to serve you sustainably, if, in case you believe, this is the key to success interpersonally.
I like to say that you have really taken us through a journey of, you know, us in for an individual thinking process right now from whatever you've explained, and you've beautifully summarized what you have, you know, shared in the book Multilingual Connectors. And we would, anyone who's interested, please do check out the book for sure. Daisy, I would actually really, really love to also understand your journey, you know, writing a book, being a mentor, being a founder of, you know, a Multilingual Connectors organization, and finally able to, you know, put through your thought process, your perspective, after reading, researching so much and bringing so much value to a lot of non-native speakers in Australia and worldwide. I'd like to really understand what has been your top three challenges in the process of actually coming up till this point. You know, if you can give us top three challenges, which could also serve as the top three tips for our listeners today.
That's a brilliant question. And I love that in the sense that I happen to be able to also apply the same framework I just walked you through in my book to approach these three questions.
Please go ahead.
What are the top three challenges? So let's start with language, right? In my book, I argue one needs an intermediate to basic amount of a foreign language in order to communicate effectively in the multilingual bracket English dominant environment. In writing the book, I was so intimately aware that it's predominantly the non-native English speakers who might entertain language barrier that I was writing to. So I was so conscious of my own writing style, which historically and as it is still now, is very sophisticated, is advanced, and because of the way I'd grown up acquiring language, I have a tendency of using eloquent expressions and words, not to appear very smart, but this is just the way I write. I write very well, but sometimes it can be very dense to write. And it was really also on the back of this, a session where I argued the importance of simple and plain languages, factoring in the knowledge of the audience, their linguistic capacity. So that's something I was challenged throughout the process of creating this book, because this is where I also integrate common literature and theories from psychology. So I had to really literally translate, not just between languages, but really make sense of what I did, because it all had a practical implication for the reader. This is not academic literature, but this is what I hope will be a really practical, simple to use guide for all the readers. Whilst also want to retain some of my personal touch, to portray myself as a deep thinker, which I think I have successfully done in the way I've articulated that. So that's challenge one, the use of language to strike a balance between the accessibility of the English I write and also to provide the depth and breadth of thinking I want to demonstrate to the global audience. The second part is psychology, right? The psychology and the mindset definitely is not a mean feat. I precisely started in December 2022, and it took me about 6 months to finish the manuscript. In the same period, to finish that 65k word, I had a day job, I had a university tutoring role. I was also mentoring in the background, hustling on the side, whilst fulfilling many roles wearing many hats, also responding to speaking engagement like this, those emerging podcasts and panels. So I did all of this within 6 months, and it was no mean feat. It was quite an intellectual sport, or more so a mental marathon for me. And looking back, I would say that, well, for you to not do something, you have so many plenty of reasons. But for you to do something, you must have a very strong inner driver. I knew I had the publishing timeline to meet, but also I was also thinking about my audience. How much of an injustice I might do to them by postponing the creation of the book. And also in writing, I had to really connect to my heart. I didn't want this to be like a native speaker's version of John C. Maxwell or some celebrity's literature. I want this to be my creation. So it took a leap of faith and took a leap of courage. Because the predominant fear was, what if nobody cared? What if there was no publisher who would have the buying? What if I couldn't hit the top of the chart on Amazon or so forth? These were all hair trashes, which I also unpack in the context of connecting in a different language. Right? So you can see I had to make connections in the process of creating the book. I had to create my project team from the back of house to marketing. So yeah, the psychological factor was nowhere to be downplayed. And also the third point, communication essentials, then I would say it's not just the written, but also the visual, the book cover design, and also all the way to marketing. How could I just make the book more visible, right? And that was exactly why I remain active, to stay online, stay active, launching my own podcast, and also actively participating in different events and NPOs to promote the book. Something I do enjoy to do on top of what my publisher is doing for me. So it's all about learning how do you sell yourself, but also sell yourself in the benefit for the benefit of people.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Daisy. I can see if anyone can really take out the points that Daisy has mentioned, the challenges that she had faced writing in her books, that can actually be extracted and applied to your own journey of, when you will face challenges, facing any desired goal that you want to, and you want to step in that direction, you have to be laser focused, you have to think through things, you have to build those connections, you really need to go and ask for the help, and you really need to not stop and not give excuses. So thank you so much, Daisy. I think it has been such a lovely, lovely time to kind of chat to you today, understanding your journey from being a migrant at such a young age to navigating your entire journey through the uni, started to feel that at that point that maybe, just maybe, even after doing so much for yourself, for your peers around you, there's still something lacking that you felt that that you have to still kind of master that. But then comes your amazing journey where you realize that yes, language is very important. Being multilingual is quite a gift, I would say. But more than that, what really matters is you yourself, your confidence, and what you really want to bring to the table. And that's what you have been really advocating for, bringing people together, building that confidence in them, and asking them to take that first step and an inch closer every day. So thank you so much, Daisy, for being on my first step ever. And before we take your leave, I like to quickly ask you if you have any quote or a saying that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
Where there's a will, there's a way. Something I grew up loving and attaching myself to so firmly.
That is perfect. That is amazing. And that is so, so true for your own story as well. And I'd like to wish you many more milestones in your career, whatever you want to step into going forward in your life, in whichever role that you want to be, a mentor, speaker, an author, or maybe much more than that going forward. And I would just like to kind of congratulate you on really, you know, elevating and building the confidence in a lot of other people in on your journey, because that's really, really important. You know, when you are able to kind of empower yourself, and along with that, you're also able to empower a lot of other people, that is pure gold, I would say. So thank you so much, JC, for being on my first step ever. And for all my listeners out there, I like to say, stay tuned. Start believing in yourself and keep believing in yourself until we bring you another such amazing powerhouse stories for you to take your first step. Thank you so much, Daisy. Please do give ratings and please do write your comments. And you can directly reach out to me on myfirststepever_IN. That's my Instagram handle. A little about myself. I have always loved performing on stage, acting, speaking, and just emoting myself. So I use these medium different ways so that I can connect with people, help them, empower them, infotain them, which is to inform them and entertain them. If you would like to collaborate for any opportunities, more than welcome to connect with me on my Instagram handle. Thank you.